schus for four shlemes and afkali ben gila. And we should start stavos. So, Parshas Bahar, is there any more fascinating, controversial, acrimonious, sublime, or difficult mitzvah in the Torah than Shemitah? If there is, I don't quite know of it. So Torah says, Daber b'nei Yisrael martalehem. God says to Moshe, tell the Jewish people, say to them, Ki sovo el haoretz asher ani nosein lachem. When you come to the land that I am giving you, v'shavso haoretz shabbos lashem. The land should rest. It should be a Shabbos, a Sabbath for God. Sheish shanim tizras sadecha, v'sheish shanim tizmar karmecha. The basic framework is for 6 years you can sow your fields, 6 years you can prune your vineyards, v'asaftas tuvasa, and then harvest your crop, uvashana shviyis, in the 7th year, Shabbat Shabbason yel oret Shabbos Lashem. It should be a Sabbath of Sabbaths for the land, Shabbos for God, sadcholos Yisro v'charmacholos Yismor. You should not sow your field, you should not prune your vineyard, Shnas Shabbason yel oret, v'yisa Shabbos oret lachem lachlo, lacho ulavdecho v'la'amosecho. And the Sabbath of the land will be for you, meaning the produce that comes out that year should be for you to eat. So there's no isser to harvest food, but the isser is to store food. You can harvest what you need for the day, it's for you, your household, for your cattle, that will be for food. So you can't use it for other purposes, but it will be for food. Now, letting the land lie fallow might be very good from an agricultural perspective. In fact, my knowledge of agriculture, honed through years growing up in the Bronx, taught me that it's regularly done in America, in any agricultural society, that land is allowed to rest every few years. And it's also called crop rotation. They will they'll plant different crops to allow the soil to react differently and to keep it vibrant. But it's not heard of, it's certainly not in an American context, or anywhere else in the world, that they will decide just to allow all the land to remain uncultivated for an entire year. Because that, theoretically, not theoretically, practically, pragmatically, would be a disaster for the economy of that year. So it's always rotated. Different years, something else. Every year, something else is allowed to lie fallow. They alternate. Now, the question then becomes, seems like a natural question. Let's see, Pasuk Chaf in Parak Chaf Hei. If you were told not to work for a year, what would be your first question? That's a good question. Okay. V'chi Samru, and if you will say, Manachal Vashana Shvihis, what are we going to eat in the 7th year? Hey, lo nizra, since we're not going to sow, v'lo nesofes to aseinu, won't be able to harvest our crop in a normal way, so what are we supposed to eat? It's interesting that the problem really is not necessarily the 7th year, because you could harvest towards the end of the 6th year, and then use that for the 7th year. So the problem's really in the 8th year. What do you do the following year? The Masai Shemitah. But nonetheless, we have this promise from God. I will command, I will ordain my blessing already in the 6th year. And you will be able to produce your crop for 3 years. In other words, the bracha in the 6th year will be so immense that the crops will be able to sustain you for 3 years, or not fully 3 years, but close to 3 years. So you'll again sow in the 8th year, and you'll eat from the old tzvuah. So you'll be able to eat into the 9th year the old tzvuah. So how does it work out practically? Rashi says that u'shlosh hashanim liktsas hashishis minisan Rosh Hashanah. So the crop has to sustain you for the last half of the 6th year, from Nisan until, from the spring harvest until the fall, to Rosh Hashanah, Vilashviyas, and this year entirely, entire Shemitah year, Velashminis. And into the eighth year, Sheyizru Bashminis b'Marcheshvan, they'll be able to sow already in Marcheshvan, the full planting, the Yiktzru b'Nisan, and they will be able to harvest again in Nisan, the spring crop. So in fact, it's not three full years, but it's parts of 3 years. Half of the sixth, full year of the seventh, and half of the eighth, and that becomes the bracha for 3 years. So, what kind of mitzvah is this, which is so contrary to human nature in a variety of ways? Now, every mitzvah, almost by definition, challenges us in some way to overcome the Eitz Hara, to overcome our inclinations. But here, this mitzvah seems to be even more than most, because at the very beginning of the Torah, man is commanded, "Zeh sapecha toch halacha." Basic rule of life, by the sweat of your brow, you'll eat bread. If you want to eat, you will have to work for it. All right? Now, that rule is regularly challenged these days, especially by some of our young people who somehow survive without working. But nonetheless, they're at least someday they'll enter the parasha, probably. In any event, we're told not to rely on support and to work. That's the basic rule of life. You eat what the labor of your hands. You toil. Not only that, but there is a human tendency, especially in Western society, but you see from Chazal, it's probably universal, man wants to protect his property, protect our money, our investments. We see it's something about security, all right? And granted, on a very high level, the Gemara speaks about the person who has pas v'salo. He has bread in his basket, and he wonders what's he going to eat tomorrow. That person is lacking in faith. It's true. That was the faith, really, of the Jews who left Mitzrayim, the Ochle Haman. What was man? Man was daily bread. So you could not leave over man to the next day, meaning you had to completely negate that aspect of the human personality that wants to plan, if not like a squirrel storing nuts for the winter, at the very least you want to know, on Wednesday what you're eating on Shabbos. You don't want to wait till Friday afternoon. You want to know each day that you have not only for this day, but you have for the next day as well. So maybe we're not on the level of the Ochle Haman, the people who survived on the manna in the desert, in which case they didn't know what was coming the next day. They just had to trust in Hashem. But now, in fact, we don't live like that. And it's not only we don't live like that. I don't think man ever lived like that. Even in the time of the Tanakh, where the laws of Shemitah applied, no one lived like that. No one just wants to know they have for today. Granted, you can't plan 20 years ahead, 5 years ahead maybe, but you can't. You want to plan a week ahead, a month ahead, especially now with the complexity of life, where it's not just a question of harvesting your grain to produce your wheat for bread and milking your cow and slaughtering others for meat. It's more than that. You have rent, you have tuition, you have a whole melange of other expenses that have to be cared for. So what's the philosophy even that would underlie, in a modern sense, this notion basically of not doing any income-producing activity on your land for a year and relying on the bracha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that you'll be sustained for 3 years? Well, how difficult is it? One nature of the difficulty is that, we'll see in a moment, apparently Jews never followed it. It's the only mitzvah in the Torah that Jews never obeyed from the first moment we entered the land of Israel. There are breaches of Shemitah. But it's so difficult that, as we well know, today it's a major dividing line between Jews in the land of Israel, because this is a Shemitah year. So there are a variety of approaches involving the Het HaMechira, the permission to sell the land of Israel to non-Jews so as to allow Jews to work on it. The Heter itself has undergone a number of revisions over the last 120 years when it was first adopted in 1888 a number of revisions. So even the Heter of Rav Kook, he permitted some agriculture work to be done because of the Shachat Chak. It was a very exigent circumstance. Harashah, he said. And he said, of course, that you'd have to revisit whether it's Harashah every year. But he didn't permit every activity. He permitted a certain limited number of activities. But it just, you know, takes on a life of its own. General rule of the rabbinate, once there's a heter in any form, it just becomes in every form. If you say you could do the, you know, the five choices, just do one, so the other four naturally follow too. So that even the heter has been completely transformed into something which has become a blanket prohibition. Now, the fact is, it is a little chaotic in Israel these days. I wrote a few months ago when I was there shopping. What's that?
You wrote an email about it.
Right. Shopping has become much more complex than it should be. I mean, Israel is always complex, but much more than it should be because of the variety of possibilities that are presented to an individual. Now, again, Sarav Cook said very simply in 1908, but for the heter, Jews would starve. It's hard to say that these days Jews would starve, since agriculture is, contrary to the mythology, it's a very, very low percentage of Israel's exports. And the fact that Israel has a favorable balance of trade that America could only envy. America hasn't even had a month of a favorable balance of trade in quite a long time, maybe decades. And Israel last year was exported $2 billion more than they imported. So there's no doubt on a theoretical basis Israel could export what it wishes and import all the grain that it needs and vegetables and fruit, etc., which they do anyway a good part of the year, a good part of the other 6 years, and be able to survive. But nonetheless, the industry, the agriculture industry, would suffer. And because of now it's become more an inconvenience than a loss of life. There's no starvation involved, but just an inconvenience to many of the farmers. So therefore, the heter still relied on. So what to do? So I don't want to go into in too much depth, but what I always tried to follow when I was there is to eat only from the Otzer Basin. Otzer Basin is a mechanism that was created whereby the land and the produce are distributed, given over to the basin, the basin distributes. It's almost indistinguishable from the regular shopping, except certain stores are designated, and the signs up as Otzer Basin, that fruit of Shemitah is permissible. It takes into account the obvious recognition that times have changed since biblical times. It's no longer a person just producing fruit or vegetables or grain for himself. You go to your field, you take what you need for the day, which was the law of Shemitah in the past, but now it's mass-produced and has to be distributed somehow. So the individual farmer or merchant can't sell it. It's achloh, not the schora. It's to be eaten, not for sale. So it's given over to the basin, similar to the Prusbel at the end of this year. That's given over to the basin to be collected, and Basin distributes it. And you have a flourishing business in Yuvul Nochri, which I confess I indulged in on occasion as well. You know, Yuvul Nochri, either coming from the Arabs or Jordan, Arabs in Gaza or Jordan, or from Europe. That's also a possibility. So, it didn't offend me that much. I wrote at the time that importing produce from the Arabs only seems to bother Jews, some Jews during the Shemitah year. The fact they do the other 6 years of the cycle doesn't really bother them that much, which to me was always a little unusual. I mean, Israel's largest importer are the Arabs of Judea, Samaria, and Gaza. And their largest importer is the State of Israel. So it's not just a Shemitah issue, it's the entire year. Yet, I just heard this when I got back, Rav Nevensol was asked, can you buy Yuvul Nochri, like from the Arabs of Gaza? So he said, you can't say it's Asur, but you have to do Malicha before it's eaten. You know, we sold the meat. So he said, why Malicha? He said, to get the blood out. That's a very, very vivid image. And there's no doubt that that there is some legitimacy to it. On the other hand, you have the government of Israel giving them $60-70 million a few months ago, so I don't quite see how one cucumber is going to support terror, and the government is not supporting terror, the millions that they're giving them. But nonetheless, it is true. Now, the Het HaMechir has its own problems, of course, the primary one being that it just doesn't sound real to anyone. And aside from the fact that there's a long discussion in the Poskim about the issue of Lo Techonem, you're not allowed to sell to non-Jews, give them permanent residence, real estate in the land of Israel. So whether it applies to Muslims or not, or whether this is permanent, some want to say here, by giving them the land, you are in fact fostering Jewish residence in the land of Israel. So Lo Techonem meant not to allow them in to destroy our residence. So here you're actually helping our residence. Nonetheless, fiction doesn't sit well with many people, and here the fiction was exposed a few months ago in a very vivid way. Reading the paper once when I was there, I cut out the article even. So the way it works is the Israel Lands Authority sells the land to a Druze, all right, and it allows Jews to work on the land. Well, for years now, the Israel Lands Authority has been suing some of the Moshavim for illegally diverting their agricultural land to business or commercial use, all right? So the four Moshavim in the Sharon, like Rishpon, for example, if you see, if you drive, say, between Tel Aviv and Netanya, it's now very heavily industrialized. There's an IKEA, there's an Ace Hardware, there's an amusement park, a swimming pool. That's all agricultural land. By law, they weren't allowed to do that because the government regulates what the land is used for. So they're always sued. And the way, you know, they just pay the fine because obviously industry is going to produce more, make more income for those kibbutzim than planting corn or oranges or whatever. Well, this year they were sued again for diverting their land for commercial industrial use, and their lawyer defending them saying the ILA has no standing because since they sold the land to the Druze, they have no right to enforce the law regarding land use. It's not their land. If the Druze want to enforce it, then that's a different issue. They have no standing in the suit. And the ILA was forced to say in court that the sale of land is fictitious, and therefore they still remain the true administrators of the land. Well, there you have it. How that case wound up, I don't know. Those are the arguments. And there's a lot of these cases, you know, when they don't want to deal with the sensitive issues, they'll just postpone it for a couple of years, and then they'll deal with it. But nonetheless, it just highlights, it underscores the problem that's before us. So if it is fictitious, so what are we doing? Who are we fooling? The Shavsara, Shabbos Lashem. So how are we going to fool HaKadosh Baruch Hu? It's very complex, and I have no doubt that it's the symbol of the struggle to implement the Torah in the modern world, but it's more than that as well. By the way, there's no easy breakdown, as people often simplistically do, between the Zionists and non-Zionists, as if to say the Zionists support that the Mechir, the non-Zionists don't. Historically, it wasn't like that. And the classic case is that of the early antagonists of the Het HaMechira, going back to 1888. So a few people recommended it, but they said they wouldn't do it unless Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan Spector, of Reitz fame, supported it. He's a great posek of the time. He wasn't a Zionist cluster. He wasn't a Zionist at all. Yitzchak Elchanan Spector was the one who endorsed it, who said you could do such a thing. He was challenged vehemently by the Netziv, and the Netziv was one of the leaders of Chovei Tzion. The Netziv was a big Zionist before Zionism became a term even. The Netziv opposed it because he said it's a fraud, and he said more than that. And I quote from the Netziv's Shuvah in Meshev Dover on it. He said that the life and existence of Klal Yisrael is not based on natural causes, whether economic or otherwise, like the nations of the world. But we're supported by Zeros Olam, by the eternal arms, so to speak, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's how Klal Yisrael survives. Our survival is legendary and unexpected. And he said, so to Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel, the same way. It only survived because there's a separate Hashgah, a special Hashgah HaPratis, a special unique divine providence, specific providence that works supernaturally. That's how Klal Yisrael survives. That's how Eretz Yisrael survived. But to be able to earn the Hashgacha Pratis, we have to observe the mitzvos atzlios ba'aretz. We have to observe the mitzvos that are dependent on the land, that is to say, mitzvos like Shemitah, like Trumos and Maisros, etc. Now this, of course, is something which causes us to take a little note and at least pause before we blithely conclude one way or the other. So in next week's Sedra, in Bahar, one of the things that are emphasized in the Tochacha is the neglect of the Jewish people of fulfilling this mitzvah of Shemitah. The pasuk says, "Va'yisa'artzachem shemama," your land will become desolate. "Va'arechem yucharba," your cities will become destroyed. "Oz tirtzeh haaretz ashamsoseha kol yemei hashama batem be'aretz avechem." Then your land will be appeased all the days of its desolation, and you are in your enemy's land. "Oz tishbasa aretz v'hertzos ashamsoseha." Then your land will rest. Then it will be appeased because of the Shabbosos, the Shemitos you did not observe. Kol yemei ha-shama tishbos, all the days of its desolation, it will rest. Eis asher lo shavso b'shavsos eichem b'shiftechem eleo, seeing as you did not rest on those Shabbosos when you dwelled on the land. By the way, think for a moment. You know, it's like a parent that yells at a child before they do something wrong, not just after they do something wrong. Here's the tochem b'chukosai. They're only the second year since they left Egypt, right before the Chet HaMeraglim, so they don't know when they're going, but here they're saying, God is saying to them, you will be punished, and you will be punished for not following the Shemitah, which I just told you about in Parshas b'chukosai, right, and in Shavuos also. But you're not going to follow it. You're not going to follow it, and you'll be punished. The Sifra says here, "Oz tirtzar teshav sosel." So listen to the words, and at least we'll understand where the nitziv was coming from. Ani amarti lochem, God says, I told you, "Shetiyu zorim sheish umeshamtim li achas." You should sow for six, and you should cease for one. "Vishvil shetedu sheoret shalihi." So you'll know the land is mine. "Vatem lo asisim kain," and you did not do that. "Imdu gulumi mena v'hitishmat mehilel kol shmitin shechayev esli." So now get up and exile yourselves, and the land will cease of itself, and it will rest all those shmitas that it was obligated, and that's the pasuk. "Oz tirtzar teshapso seho kol yemei hashama." Then the land will be appeased because of that. "Kol yemei hashama tishbos." The Gemara Sanhedrin, Taflam Teslam and Aleph, makes the same point. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael, God said to the Jewish people, "Zaru sheish, bashmitu shefa." Sow for six, plant for 6 years, and then cease. Do nothing in the seventh. "Kedesha teidu shor shali," so you'll know the land is mine. "Vehein lo asukein, ela chatu vigalu." They did not do that. Rather, they sinned, and they were exiled. So it's no wonder that a proto-Zionist like the Netziv of Volozhin feared that the entire enterprise of the new Yishuv with El Chovei Tzion would be destroyed. And no wonder passions are so high even today because of that. If we go back to our Sedra in Perek Chafhei Pasuk Yudches, "Vasisemes chukosai v'is mishpatai tishmeru vasisemosam," God says, if you do all this, Shemitah, Yovel, follow my statutes, my laws, observe them and do them, "Vishavtem ala oretz lovetach," you will dwell on the land in security. And Rashi says, "Shebe'avon Shemitah Yisrael Golim," for the transgression of Shemitah, Israel is exiled. That's the pasuk. Shenemar, "Oz tirtzas shapsosel, v'yirtzas shapsosel, v'shivim shonos ha-golos bavel, k'neged shivim shmitos, batlu, the 70 years of exile, the Babylonian exile, correspond to the 70 Shemitahs that they did not observe. Wow. 70 Shemitahs, that means 490 years. They didn't observe the 490 years, 70, yeah, 490 years, they didn't observe the Shemitah. But I have to say that it would have to mean that they observed some of them, because the second base of Mikdash was 410 years, right? And they started Shemitah about 35, 40 years after the land of Israel. Beit HaMikdash was built 480 years afterwards. So it could be that they observed, I had observed some, but nonetheless, 70 is a lot. 70 means that 490 years of Shemitahs that were not observed at all. If you think of another mitzvah in the Torah that's so widely disregarded for such a long period of time, even knowing the consequences, breach of Shemitah means exile. And if that could happen, come second base of Mikdash, the same thing. All right, but those who say that Sid Machlokas, whether Shemitah applies Bizman Hazeh, whether it applied once the first exile took place, Midaraisa, whether it applies only when Yovel exists or not Yovel exists. There's even a question, by the way, whether this promise of God of the Tzivisiyas Birchasi Lochem Bashna Shishis, whether that even applies, whether the brach exists for the 3 years only at a time when Shemitah is Daraisa or not. By the way, you know, we almost take it for granted because we had the Mechir that Shemitah is Darabanon. Many said it was Daraisa. The Nitziv, for one, held Shemitah was Daraisa, even Bizman Hazeh, and many others as well. But nonetheless, you see, we're in a difficult area, because here you have, it's a primary institution of the Torah. In fact, one could argue, hey, I'll argue right now, Shemitah is the defining mitzvah of Eretz Yisrael. There are mitzvahs that don't relate to Eretz Yisrael, they're not through the Torah, like Kashrus or Tilling, and the mitzvahs that are tied to the land of Israel, like Shemus and Maestros. The characteristic mitzvah which defines the land of Israel and our dwellings therein and our possessions thereof is the mitzvah of Shemitah. So how then can it be so wantonly disobeyed and disregarded for so many centuries? And why is it then that as much as we try to revive the Torah as a national instrument in every area of life, even in religious circles, it has a more difficult, this myth has a much more difficult time penetrating our consciousness as to its seriousness, even in our day. Notwithstanding the fact that, you know, there are thousands of farmers who observe the Shemitah till Chasa this year. I think it's probably close to 40%, maybe even 50% of the farmland in Israel is not worked in violation of Shemitah this year. But nonetheless, if our very residence and possession of the land of Israel depends on it, so you say it's a security issue. That's also a security issue. But do not work the land at all. Only work they do is, so the Gemara says, the Gemara allows, Lu'ukme ilono. You can do work to preserve the crop so the land does not become infertile, but you can't develop, you can't plant, you can't do other things. So Lu'ukme ilono. Many activities. It's a very complicated area. Among them, but there are five or six different opinions, what constitutes Lu'ukme ilono. So there's different opinions. There's many different opinions whether fertilizing is considered sustaining it or improving it for the coming years. It's all these. I'll let the farm people handle that. But nonetheless,
I think I'm not orthodox, and they are still.
No, most of the farmers who were no. Most of the farmers who observe the Shemitah are definitely orthodox.
40% of the
Orthodox are Orthodox. Farmers. Farmland. Yeah. Farmland. Some of them famous, you know, Kibbutz Chafetz Chaim. They're fully Shemitah compliant, Omiyut. Shemitah compliant fully since the late 40s, early 50s. So you have many places like this. Right. And by the way, you can even drive. I drove to the south a couple of times. to the heartland. You see that many fields are not being worked. They're just lying. People come and harvest the crop. They go to base, they eat themselves, and it's not being worked. And a lot rely, of course, on the Het HaMechir as well, especially those who are involved in exports. It's a big issue, by the way, to export the Perishvias. By the way, it's one of the reasons why on bottles of wine, you know, stand the back, no chashash of shvias, because you can't export Perishvias. I remember the call last year by the local wine merchant who said he got a bottle in. What should he do with it? They just haven't sent him a bottle of Perishvias wine. Right? I said, well, don't sell. He said he definitely was not going to sell it. But what should he do with it? So we discussed what to do. But check, most bottles don't. I happen to have one bottle at home that was from Perishvias. That you can't throw it out. You can't use it in an unusual way to drink everything. But whatever, it can't be exported. Obviously, it's going to cut into people's profits. So the question is, what is Shemitah, what kind of mix is this? What does Shemitah ask of us? Is it realistic? Right, fields have to be allowed to rot. So you have to put in a special bag for 2 days, 3 days. Yeah, we lived with this when I was there. Except for Yevul Nochri. All right? If you know the cucumbers are coming from Jordan, then just throw it out like regular. After 2 or 3 days, a special bag, and then you throw it out when it's ready to decay. The south of Israel, it's also part of it. According to many opinions, the area around the lot in the Arava is not part of Eretz Yisrael for the purpose of Shemitah, so you can get the produce from there too. Everything is very Rav Rimon, by the way, from Alon Shvut. Heroic man in a number of ways. He's one who founded Job Katif to get work and job retraining for the Gaza refugees. But one of the things that he did, the Reverend Mundus, he published all Sefer on Shemitah, including color-coded charts. There's also the Torah this week mentions that the Bior, when you could start, when you have to take all the products out of your house, but using again, each fruit and vegetable is different. As an example, perfect timing. Fruit was no problem while I was there. No problem Shemitah at all because it's the product of the sixth year. Fruit, the Shemitah problems start only now, this week, the middle of May, middle of the year. Now the fruit that you buy is subject to the same problems. And the problem with fruit and Shemitah will continue into next year, into the eighth year, be careful to buy it. Whereas most of the vegetable issues will be resolved come with the Shana time. But to the Shif, it's a complicated area, but he was a color-coded chart. Which vegetables, which fruits, where, when, and where it's coming from. It's very, very well organized, so one should know. So what kind of mitzvah is this? I mean, what is the basic idea that ties this mitzvah really to our possession of the land of Israel? What does Shemitah ask of us? Faith. What's the key? What's the key word in terms of Shemitah to understand it? Shabbos. You notice at the beginning of the Sedra, that word recurs a number of times. V'shavsah ha'aretz, Shabbos l'Hashem, u'vashnash v'yishnash Shabbos Shabboson yelor Shabbos l'Hashem, shnash Shabboson yelor v'shav Shabbos aretz l'chem l'achlo. Again and again. Shemitah is called Shabbos. What Shabbos? Shemitah Shabbos. By the way, you know, it's not that far removed from our personal experience that many Jews came to America who felt themselves in the same position as Jews in Israel and Shemitah. Had to work on Shabbos. Didn't work on Shabbos, right? Don't come back on Monday. Lost your job. So Shabbos represented that type of test also. And no doubt a whole generation or two were lost because of that. You know, I was zocha that my grandfathers, Aleihem HaShalom, both came to this country wrong Jewish work. One was a shaychet, one was a butcher, kosher butcher. So their work did not involve Chil Shabbos necessarily. Although I do remember, you'll remember it as well, there were butchers that opened Shabbos too. But no, it didn't happen. He was a Shomer Shabbos butcher. Nobody looked askance on it. He wasn't going to fire himself for working on Shabbos. So that worked out well. Shemit also never took place on Shabbos. But others weren't so fortunate. It was a tremendous heartache. Jews always Shomer Shabbos and caught between working on Shabbos and feeding their family. Terrible Nisyanos. nothing critical, I'm just being observational. Terrible nisyonos that Jews underwent, those who observed Shabbos, right? And those who couldn't observe Shabbos. Rabbi Wein once said that he remembers in his father's shul in Chicago that Hashkama Minyan of 700 people. Hashkama on Shabbos. Main Minyan, 9 o'clock, maybe 50 people. And that's what it was. But it's very hard to observe a Shabbos, convey to your children, then, you know, you're working and then you go to shul and then working. There are two types of Shabbosos. So let me share with you some more. Rav Kook said, based on the Zohar, that there's a Shabbat HaYachid, there's an individual Shabbos, and there's Shabbat HaOretz. Actually, Torah has that. The Shabbos of the Yachid, of an individual, and Shabbos HaOretz. Shabbat HaOretz is Shvita. Rav Kook said a different recording of Zohar. So the Zohar references Shabbat HaYachid and Shabbat HaUmah. There's an individual Shabbos, and there's a national Shabbos. The individual Shabbos comes every week. The national Shabbos comes once every 7 years, and in fact they both serve the same purpose. Shabbos comes to allow us to sit back, to take stock, to learn a little, spend time with our family, to gather our resources in order to think a little more clearly about why we're living and what our tasks are in the world. Rav Nier, in his commentary, phrases this in a very, very profound and beautiful way, which reflects, I think, both on the Shabbat HaYachid and the Shabbat HaUmah. He said, the week, I think we all experience this, the week wears us down in a number of ways. The work week. That's the reason why they call it the work week. You work. It wears us down physically. You're tired, you're getting up, you're toiling the whole day, you're coming back at night. Halavai, you have to come to Minyan, learn a little, deal with your kids and grandchildren with the patience and tolerance, because there's so many activities, there's so many things that have to be done. And the week, he said, wears us down psychologically as well, because there are inherent frustrations that are involved in work. It's the sweat of the brow. Coats the dardar, that's miachwal. There's thorns and thistles, whatever we do, there's traffic. You know, I used to commute. Thank God I have a short commute now. There's no traffic on West Englewood Avenue, so I'm able to make it to work in 60 or 90 seconds. But to go across the bridge, I used to commute across the Tri-Bar, which was also no bargain. But to go across the bridge, like my wife does a few days a week, the George Washington Bridge, you'll go crazy, unless you have good Torah tapes like this one to listen to. But you go insane, you're sitting there, you're not making any progress. You know, it's like you can have a 10-mile trip that could take 90 minutes. And then you get to work in that frustrations. The employees don't do their jobs, or this guy's late, or the document was not done well, and you work on a week, has to be redone. And he writes that there are frustrations also in the home, right? You know, getting a child quiet. My new granddaughter is now 5 weeks old. Been crying for 5 weeks. She's 8 weeks old. Crying for 8 weeks. Karen said, usually stops after 12. All right. That's what I think, right. Well, doesn't live with me, so it's only the visiting which is an issue. It cries constantly. Good, healthy lungs, Baruch Hashem. But unfortunately, parents and grandparents have healthy ears too. So something has to give. The frustrations involved. The frustrations also of the work week wear us down. No. Right now, she's not Mavdil Ben Kodesh L'chol. There's no difference. And also, we are worn down spiritually during the week. Spiritually meaning with all the physical toil and all the psychological frustrations, people work and they wonder, what am I doing here? What am I working for? What do I need all this for? What? I'm only on this earth a short time, and to spend it on the job, 9 hours, 11 hours, some people 14 hours a day. They take it home with them. They're exhausted. So what do I want out of life? And people ask themselves, is this it? This is life? This is it? And they can have everything. They can have so many things. So this is it? This is my life? All of it can be draining. a person can have everything in the physical world that he wants, and yet still sense that something is missing. Shabbos comes, and Shabbos comes with that sense of menucha, of well-being. Physical demands of the week are behind us, except you have the demand for big meals on Shabbos, but aside from that, the real physical toil, the exertions of the week are behind us, and the frustrations of the week fade into the distance. The person is zocha and should make himself or herself zocha to put the psychological frustrations of the Yemei Chol behind them when Shabbos comes. And then on Shabbos, even the spiritual deterioration of the week is rectified, and we feel a renewed strength because we're involved in a much more placid type of Irenic type of tefillah, of Talmud Torah, of meals, of zmiros. There's no fast food on Shabbos. No one's going to have a falafel and then run on, or a shawarma and a pita and then move on. No, even the Shabbos meals are much more pleasant. Shabbos brings with it that sense of menucha that Avinir said, to exalt the whole, exalt the weekdays, to give the weekdays its soul, give them their meaning, so in fact the Yemei Chol are able to draw this nourishment and sanctity from Shabbos itself. What Shabbos does is restore the intimacy that man has to himself, to his children, spouse, really in terms of being an Eved Hashem. The intimate relationships that people have that give them the source of comfort in life, that's what Shabbos renews. And that we are privileged to have on a weekly basis. Shemitah does the same thing. And maybe that's why it's so difficult. We create islands around ourselves, sometimes just ourselves, our immediate family, maybe a close circle of friends. Our desire is to feel intimate with every member of the community. It's not always like that. What Shemitah does is restore that same sense of intimacy to the Ummah, to the nation. Why? Because of the loss of ownership. There's a diminution of the ego. Because since my land is no longer my land is now everyone's land. And that's the definition of Shemitah. The land becomes Hefker. So anybody can come on my land and take my apple, take my fruit, take my vegetable. They can't damage it. They can only take enough for one meal, but nonetheless, they're allowed. The sense of pride that I take, or security, the feeling of accomplishment, in fact, the feeling that makes me different than someone else. My crop is better, my job is better, my income is greater, my house is nicer, my car is faster. All those things which serve to create these artificial distinctions between us and other people, those fade away. Those disappear during the Shemitah year, and the Shemitah is designed to make them disappear. So Shemitah really is a primer on V'hafarecha Kamocha. If we have 6 years of financial combat, of economic competition between people, and that's why, by the way, in the middle of the laws of Shemitah and Yovel, you have the admonitions against Onoah, whether Onoah's Devarim or Onoah's Mamon, whether it's verbally wronging someone else or financially wronging someone else, overcharging, cheating someone, because the 6 years are competitive. I have my farm, he has his farm, we have the same people that we're going to sell to. I want to sell to these customers. I love to have his customers too. Could we live in a world where people said, what I have is fine, what you have is fine, you sell to your customers, I sell to my customers? Yeah, it's possible, but it doesn't happen. It's very rare that's like that, because the guy who says that, he's the one taken over by the multinational corporation. He's the one that Walmart crushes into the ground, because he's not competitive, he's not keeping up. So the 6 years are competitive years. The seventh year is Shatzah Oretz, Shabbos Hashem. God gives us the Shabbos every seventh year, like he gives us the Shabbos every seventh day, so we should reinforce and put into practice the principle of v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, that everything belongs to everyone, because it all belongs to God. And therefore, it bespeaks a complete transformation of the human personality. Every seventh year, we're forced to take a year off and get in touch with ourselves. The same way we do on Shabbos weekly, we do the Shemitah the entire year, to accept, even to embrace, that very notion. That is not easy to do. It's not easy. It's not easy for someone in competitive mode to suddenly turn it off. It's not easy for someone who is working to suddenly say, "Now I'm not going to work." You know, that's why you find, by the way, even on Shabbos, it's hard for people to disconnect. People sit in shul, and the exact of the stocks, the business, this client, this problem, it's hard to break away. It's also to do, it's forbidden, but nonetheless, you see where their mind is. So they're not working 6 days, they're working 7 days, because even on the sixth day, even on the seventh day, it's the planning what they should to do. There's a story famous of my Shabbos about someone was just walking on his property on Shabbos, and he said, "I better put a fence there this week." And then he caught himself on the road and said, "I'll never put a fence there now." Because he didn't want the fence to be associated with Shabbos. Hard to break away, but nonetheless, people are obligated to do that, because that's what gives Shabbos its intimacy. That's what enables us to get in touch with ourselves and our close ones and our loved ones, and that are our most closely held beliefs and values. That's Shabbos. Shabbos is that oasis. Shemitah is much more difficult, but Shemitah requires an even greater transformation of the personality than Shabbos does. Shabbos, those of us who can disconnect for 25 hours. Disconnect for 354 days, the longest, a leap year this year. That's much more difficult to do. For us, though, to live in Israel, what enables us to live in Israel is the Shnas HaShemitah. And that's what the Tocha says. Oz Tishbas Aretz. Similarly, if you're not going to rest the land, if you're not going to make that testimonial about the land of Israel and your residence thereon, then God says, "I'll make it for you." And in fact, when we're Be'eretz Oveichem, Eretz Oveinu, when we're in the land of our enemies, Atem Be'eretz Oveichem, Oz Tishbas Aretz, Virtzas HaShavsoseh, then the land will find its Shemitah. Because to be a Jew requires having the faith of an Eved. An Eved means I am dependent on HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the system he set up. I may think to myself, I have a better system, I can improve the system, but at the end of the day, all those come to naught. So when the Pasuk says, the Pasuk with which we started, the Chisamru, if a person says, is possible. What am I going to eat in the seventh year? Haimon Israel, when I suffered to a Sainu, I defined the Chi as if. The Chi doesn't only mean if. The Chi can mean when too. Because people will say that. The Torah says, when you say, it's a natural question. When you say, Manochal Bashana Shriyas, when you say, because everyone is going to say that. It's natural. Doesn't make it right, doesn't make it good. But it's very natural that people will say, Manochal. Hey, kid comes home from school. What's his first question? Manochal Basho Hashvias. I haven't eaten something in over an hour. Imagine Manochal Basho No Hashvias. What are we going to eat the entire seventh year? What are we going to eat the eighth year before the new crop is planted? So God gives us a promise. It's a big test. It's a big test. God gives us a promise. Like he promises us that not working on Shabbos is not going to affect our income. Not working the seventh year also will not. God commands his blessings. Strange language, by the way. Not just to be Mavarah, but to command. Directs his blessing, Bashna Shishis, on the sixth year. And the tour is given for the third year. By the way, while I was in Israel, someone published a study. It was in October early November. about the productivity of the Israeli lands during the sixth year of the Shemitah cycle, the last 50 years. Guess what? Tremendous increase. Statistically significant increase in the productivity and the fertility of the land in the sixth year of the Shemitah cycle. Nonetheless, it still becomes a tremendous object of faith and a definition of the person, what's to be done. So I'm not here taking any halachic position, what one should do, shouldn't, it's a different question altogether. But to look at the mitzvah of Shemitah as the defining mitzvah of Jewish residents in the land of Israel, God forces us to look around in the seventh year, that says, this is Birchasi Lachem, forces us to look around in the seventh year and say, yes, I am blessed. It's just that I did not have the opportunity to open my eyes and see the blessings because of all that I've had to do in the other 6 years. With Shabbos, I can do that once a week and look around and take pride and have a sense of accomplishment, a sense of intimacy with what's most close to me. With Shemitah, I have it for an entire year to look around at the brachos, not just the brachos of the sixth year, six, seven, and eight, ninth even, but the brachos that I have all around me and the opportunities that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given me, given every worker and every Jew, to look around and say, Ashreinu Matov Chalkeinu U'manon Goraleinu, how fortunate are we that this is our portion, that this is our fate, this is our destiny, to be surrounded by a Torah, with his mitzvos, with an Umah, with a Borei Olam telling us, live this way, and you'll know the blessings of life. Okay. I thank you all very much.